Need to hold this thing like right up here like I did with you.
You had it good.
Yeah, okay.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. This is the Sweaty Eddie Show, episode 22. I'm sitting down with a new friend, Gene. How you doing, Gene?
What's up, Eddie?
So before we get into all the questions you have, I wanted to just give a quick introduction. Just introduce yourself however you see fit.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so Gene, obviously. I know you through Dave from Rolling in Jiu-Jitsu. And then Dave and I did a little podcast where I kind of asked him a bunch of questions and seemed to have gone over well. And then so we're going to do something similar today. But yeah, so my son actually goes to Dave's class, has been going for coming up on 4 years now. It's amazing. The time flies. And then I sat there for 2 years watching him, maybe even more, and finally started myself. And probably the one and only reason I keep going back is because I can't quit if he's going. I can't make him go and then not go myself. So, but yeah, so that's me. I mean, we've lived in Jersey. My wife's from Jersey originally. I was a military brat, grew up all over the world, settled here about 9 years ago. Love it out here. And yeah, that's
cool.
That's kind of it.
Gene, I basically know nothing about you. I mean, I listened to your interview, but you were interviewing Dave.
Yeah, yeah.
And the
yeah.
reason I wanted to have you on is because I thought you did a great job asking him questions and stuff. And it was fun to hear Dave actually go on and on a little bit. Because when we go, we just do back and forth, just little stuff.
Right.
And we assume everybody knows, you know, what's what, because we've been doing this for a year now.
Yep.
So I'm excited to do this.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's cool. I think the reason I wanted to go with Dave initially and similarly with you is like I'm genuinely interested in this stuff, like especially jiu-jitsu. But then like I want to ask you too a couple things about kind of the firefighter path and different things. Like I'm genuinely interested in this. And I got some feedback when I did it with Dave that, you know, like a lot of the questions I had asked, other people had those same questions, so when they listened to it, it was kind of beneficial for them too. And then, you know, just have a little fun with it too.
Yeah, I think it's beneficial because I've been in this a long time, so has Dave. So it's hard for us to think all the way back
right
to the beginning of it and, you know, where your head's at. Like, you'll ask me questions and Dave questions that we've answered a long time ago, and maybe we even forgot the questions.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
And to go back to them now, my answer might be different than it used to be, which it definitely is. Most questions that you ask yourself 10 years later, you might have a different answer to it.
Oh, yeah, totally. Especially, I would imagine with jiu-jitsu, like, you know, me coming in. It's hard to believe, but it's actually been almost a year that I've been going to class there. I had a little break for an injury, but I'm sure like your perspective from when you started is way different than it is now after been doing this for so long.
Well, one of the things is I've been doing it since I was 18. So the day I turned 18 is when I signed up because I didn't need my mommy to sign for me. That's what I was waiting for. My buddy wanted to start. We wanted to start at the same time. So I was like, just wait till I turn 18 because you're already 18. So we don't need any parents. We're on this on our own. You know, and since that day, you know, I've been involved in the community.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, so one of the things I was actually thinking about on the way here is I've been in this outside community, and I think I take for granted the types of people that I get to be around. Like somebody like you, you're a highly successful person. And for you to be in jiu-jitsu, it's likely. It's more likely for somebody to come in, and if they stick with it, they're generally more successful. So my whole adulthood has been around semi-successful to very successful people.
Right.
And it's helped kind of guide me to kind of look at points like outside of jiu-jitsu, because maybe I'm better than you at jiu-jitsu.
Oh, you definitely are, not maybe.
But that doesn't mean much to me now. Like it used to mean when I first got my blue belt, I was like, oh man, look at all these people that I'm better than, because I still had a little ego and I was young.
Yeah.
But then you look, all right, what does this person do outside of here? And you start to see, oh wow, you know.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
They're really successful outside of this, so how could I be successful outside of this as well? So I like to emulate them. So it's nice to have a skill like jiu-jitsu to trade. Like I could trade jiu-jitsu with you for outside knowledge.
Yeah, yeah,
and it's
totally
beneficial to both of us.
Yeah, no, that's super cool. I think one of the things that really got me to, besides wanting my son to have some discipline in his life, was like as I got out of the military, I started hearing more and more, like listening to Jocko, listening to Joe Rogan, and then just hearing about how beneficial jiu-jitsu is, not just in the gym, but that you can take that and kind of, you know, use those skills in different professional areas in your life, or just different areas in general in your life. So that was kind of one thing that I really wanted for my son at a young age. And then I was like, well, why not for you too? You know, like, why not for me? Like, I wasn't doing anything, just sitting around being fat and lazy. And this has got me off the couch a little bit.
For sure. That's what impresses me about you joining. I don't know how old you are.
48. Yeah.
That's a late time
Very
to start.
Late. Yeah.
And it's impressive that you've stuck with it and you still want to do it. And the children definitely help motivate. My children definitely motivate me to do things I don't want to do.
Yeah.
And I've been thinking about getting on stage again for stand-up, and that's the same thing that you did is like, I'm starting late in the game if I want to do that.
Yeah.
And it's scary to get up there because I'm so far behind of where I could have been.
For sure.
And now I don't, am I really going to embarrass myself with a bunch of, you know, early 20-year-olds?
Why not?
Yeah, why not?
Why not? Well, like you've said this before on some of your other podcasts about, you know, kind of keeping your ego in check, and you know, you don't really have a big ego, especially now that you're more mature. But I think I heard it on, I think it was Rogan that said that, challenge yourself and become a beginner again, right? Like, typically, you're right. Like, guys my age and even probably your age that aren't like, okay, I'm going to start something 100% brand new and be a beginner at it. And you really have to put your ego in check, right? Because, like, I mean, think about the guys we roll with. We're rolling with, like, how old is Sam? 23?
Yeah, 23.
Yeah, I mean, and he kills me, you know?
He kills me, too.
So it is. It is. You definitely got to check your ego. But it's also cool, like, as I've, like, started to gain a little bit of skill over the last year to see, like, the lessons really work. Like, it really, it's an awesome thing to see. So you're humbled at the same time and you're learning something, you feel good about it. So I say go for it.
Yeah, of course you say go for it. You're not the one getting up there.
I'll be there heckling you, right?
Well, Dave really wants to go. And I think, well, he doesn't even know that I'm going to go tonight because I just looked it up yesterday. As soon as I looked it up and I saw that it was a reality and I saw, like, the steps was like two steps that I have to make to go, now I start to get nervous because there's no excuses anymore.
Right.
My excuse for the past month or two was like, I don't know any places in the area. And last year I didn't have to go at all because of COVID.
Right.
But now I see that it's not as hard as I thought. And if I don't go now, it's because of, I'm a baby.
Because of you, right? Yeah, yeah. You got no one to blame but yourself,
but that's when,
right?
I get nervous, when there's no real excuses left to tell, because I've been skipping classes a little bit here and there.
Yeah, so I've heard on the podcast.
Right, but I have excuses in my back pocket that I can pull out, and I'm really telling them to myself. I don't tell them to Dave because he won't take them. He understands that they're excuses.
Yeah,
me,
sure.
I'm like, you know what? This is a pretty good one, so I'm not going to go today. But now when there's less and less and I don't have an argument against myself, if I don't do it, I feel even worse than I do when I skip.
Yeah, for sure. Makes total sense. So let me ask you, what, like, you said you were 18 and you wanted to get into it, but you didn't want your parents to have, what drove you to actually get into it, though?
It was really my friend, because we started watching The Ultimate Fighter, you know, and I was in high school, and we thought it was the coolest thing ever. You know, you're young, you got testosterone,
cool.
You're around all your friends, you want to be the toughest one.
Right.
You know, so we used to go and just wrestle around, you know, at football fields. You know, we used to go play football, you know, and then once we started getting into UFC, it was like, all right, well, football sucks. Let's just wrestle each other. We didn't know what we were doing. So it's like, how will we actually learn how to do this? So my one friend actually looked into it. He did all the research and he said, listen, I found the spot that we're going to go to. All you got to do is come with me and we'll sign up. And that was it. He pretty much held my hand through it. I didn't have to do any of the hard work. So he kind of made the decision for me. And I've kind of used people as a crutch in that way. That's why, for the stand-up especially, nobody's going to hold my hand through this. You
right.
know, if I go, it's got to be all on me, which is the scary part.
Yeah.
But he actually held my hand through it, and I stuck with it, and he didn't.
Great. Good for you. So I think back to, like, that first time. Did you walk out? I feel like Dave told me when he walked out the first time, he loved it. It was the only thing he wanted to do. Was that a similar experience for you?
Yeah, it was almost exactly the same. Because I'd already been wrestling around and stuff, but we didn't know anything, so it wasn't, you know, it wasn't as fun. But I was young,
right.
I was in shape, and I was hungry. And when we got in there, that for me, it's always the initial, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't
right.
know what it's like to walk in there. You don't know what the class is. But once I got through all the initial stuff, it's like, oh, that wasn't that bad. Because the people in there, the other white belts, maybe they hadn't trained as much as I even had. Even just rolling around with your friends and getting a cardio sweat up.
Yeah,
that's
sure.
something.
Yep. Yeah.
So I was actually doing pretty good from the start. You know, people that had no stripes or one stripe on their belt, I could hang, and they weren't going to give me too much trouble, which was enough to keep my ego like, all right, you know, we're not the worst one here, so let's keep
going.
Yeah. Some people don't have that experience. Some people are the worst one in the room for a long time.
Yeah.
And those people, when they stick it out, I feel like they'll never quit, because if they can get through that initial harsh period.
Yeah, I've heard you say that before. It was a rough one for me just getting in there, and I damn near passed out the first class. But coming back, and then what I thought was, and I still believe this to be true, I haven't had any other experiences, everyone in class is like, wants to help you, regardless of whether they're brand new or been there forever. Like, I rolled with Dan the very first time. My very first day, very first roll, didn't know who he was. Obviously, he's a beast. And he was just, like, super welcoming and coaching me along and giving me advice. And probably the best piece of advice I got was from Dave, just keep coming back.
You know what? Let me push that a little further, because somebody like me, I've taken a lot of breaks over time.
Right.
You know, maybe 3 months here, 6 months there, every so often for my whole time of training. The one thing about jiu-jitsu is every time you come back from 6 months off,
right,
your teacher, the students there are so supportive. You know, they are so happy you're back. They're never going to treat you any worse because you took time off, especially when you show back up.
Yeah.
And that's one of the supportive things of the community I think I take for granted.
Yeah.
Because sometimes people don't want you to get better. And, you know,
for whatever
some
reason,
things are
yeah.
competitive, or there's only so many spots, or whatever the case may be. And jiu-jitsu is the complete opposite. People want you there because they know, because just like Dave said, as long as you're on the mats, and even if you feel like you're getting worse, or maybe you're getting tapped more than you ever been tapped, you're getting better and you don't even know it.
Right.
So every day, every minute on the mat, you're getting better. And that's true in life. You could transfer those skills to other places, which I have done. And I believe it's true.
Yeah, yeah. That's pretty awesome. Now, you've got one kid or two?
I got two.
Two. Little ones, right?
I got a five-year-old. She's going to be five in August, and I have a three-year-old.
And you had her in class at one point. I feel like I saw her in the little
kids class at one point.
Yeah,
I brought her in one. It was. She wasn't the right age yet for that class. Dave's opened up the younger kids, but I'm not sure about my oldest. She's kind of timid,
yeah.
and she doesn't have the temperament yet for that kind of stuff. I might put her into like gymnastics or dance, like more girly stuff, because that's kind of what she's into right now.
Right.
I don't want to force her.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I want her to do it eventually. So I think I'm going to wait a little bit longer, because she's still a little immature, even for her own age.
Yeah.
So I'm going to wait till a little maturity and then try again.
But you would definitely kind of guide her that way and give her the opportunity, right?
Well, that's especially
cool.
for females. I think any female, the earlier the better they can get to just understand movements and how to protect yourself. I mean, something that Emily Kwok said to us early on when we started this was, you could feel somebody's energy better when you walk in a room and you know, when you've been up close and personal with somebody and they're trying to physically put your body parts where you don't want them to go.
Yeah, yeah.
What's true is you could walk in a room full of people and you could feel their energy without even touching them. You can understand if you're in danger, and I think that's very useful for any person, but especially a female, because if you could avoid a situation before anybody's even close enough to make contact with you, that's going to benefit you.
Totally.
Your safety.
That, and that's another thing that I like about having my son Zach in there, is that, you know, you're going to get choked out. He's seven now. He's been in since he was four, so he's been choked a number of times. Like, God forbid he ever comes up against something as he gets older, or even now as a little one, you know, like, it's not a new experience to have somebody's arm wrapped around you. He won't freak out, and he'll be able to kind of handle it and manage himself and hopefully get himself out of the situation, preferably before it starts, like you said, but God forbid something happens. And that's really why I want him to, that's one of many reasons I want to keep him going, you know.
What's a great thing for you is if you're both doing it, it's an automatic extra thing to bond.
Yeah, totally.
You know, me and my dad had baseball, and we carry that still to this day. We still go to baseball games and stuff, and it's just a nice thing to have a little extra, something that's just like yours and his.
Yeah, together. It totally is. Yeah, he actually stuck around. It was, when was it? It was last Thursday. He's like, Dad, I think I'm just, normally he gets out of class, Mom picks him up, he's gone. He's like, I think I'm going to stick around and watch your class for a little bit, and then I'll call Mom. He stayed the whole time. I thought it was the coolest thing ever, and I told him, and he goes, yeah, but I really wasn't watching you. I was talking to the other kids. I'm like, okay, well, still cool having you there.
No,
you know?
It is, because I used to go watch my dad play softball. And even though I didn't watch the game or almost never cared about what the score was, just being in the environment, playing in the dirt, meeting maybe other kids of other dads.
Yeah.
You know, it's just social interaction.
And
just
totally.
Being in the community, it's going to rub off, and he's not even going to know it.
Yeah, well, there's two things I do that I think are going to be non-negotiable for him. Like, I have him learning a second language, and he's been doing it since he was a year old, and jiu-jitsu. Like, I'll let him try football, baseball, whatever. If he wants to quit, I don't care. Jiu-jitsu and learning to speak German, I'm not going to let him quit until he's old enough that he can make his own decision.
That's a good idea. I want to do the same thing as you. I haven't started my daughters yet on the language, but it's great. I want to do the musical instrument too. Like, everything you said plus that, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a gift. Like, he doesn't understand it now, but it's intentionally a gift that I can give him that he'll have for the rest of his life, and he'll appreciate it at some point down the road. Sometimes he's a little difficult to get into class, but same thing with language. Like, he has no clue what that means at 7 years old to be able to have a second language.
So you speak German?
I speak a fair amount of German. I grew up over
fantastic.
There.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, then I wanted to... His grandmother speaks like five languages. My wife speaks a little bit of a couple languages. We couldn't settle on what to teach him. And finally, I was like, well, if you guys aren't going to do it, then I'll do it. We'll teach him German, and that's that. So he goes to school in Morristown. There's a German school that he goes to. Been going for, like I said, since he was a year old. But similarly with jiu-jitsu, it's just a gift that's going to keep giving to him for the rest of his life, you know? One thing I wanted to ask you about is, like, what's the setup with you and Dave with, like, the coaching? Like, this is my take, because I've been going there for a year. Like, I would consider you, and don't take offense to this, because I hope it's not offensive, like, the assistant coach, because you're there, you're typically teaching, you're also rolling, you fill in from time to time, but what is kind of the arrangement between yourself and Dave?
I think you give me too much credit by calling me assistant. I consider myself part of the students.
Do you? Okay.
You know, I kind of take direction from Dave in a sense, although he probably wouldn't say this. I look up to the way he runs the school. I don't think I could do it the way he does it.
I love the way he runs it. Yeah, I think it's fantastic. Yeah.
It's fantastic. So I just go, and I want to reciprocate any way I can. Like, he's letting me train there, teach there.
Right.
So I want to do the best job I can, so he keeps letting me come. That's basically it. That's our arrangement.
Okay, cool. Now, I wasn't sure, because, like, nothing has ever been, you know, one, I've never asked a question, and then nothing's, like, out there that anybody would kind of no, but without just going. And then I kind of took that also because the two of you do the podcast together. I was like, okay, so this is a team effort, both, you know, in the gym, in the podcast.
Yeah, if I could help Dave get as many students as he possibly can, that's my payment to him for just letting me be part of the community. Like, he trusts me enough to let me teach, to let me give pointers. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, the higher you get up, there is a chance for egos to get involved. Like, it's his school.
Right.
It'd be really easy for him to say, hey, you're going to teach this today, if at all.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Or, like, you know, don't tell these, you know, people any details unless I approve it.
Yeah.
There's places out there that are like that.
I'm sure. Yeah, I could totally see
that. With the lineage, I mean, I'm not technically his lineage. I get my belts from Yanni.
Right.
He gets his belts from Mario.
Right.
So, and I haven't even been training with Yanni. Yanni called me a bitch ass the other day. I'm going to have to.
I heard about that, yeah. So speaking of that, how did that happen then? Because I have a friend who trains under Yanni. He did a similar thing. He's my age, started way late in life. His son is almost the exact same age as my son. So the two of them go to Yanni's school. And they've been over by Dave once or twice as well. How did that happen with you and Dave? Because you train, I mean, Wayne is not exactly close to wherever he's at, Newton or wherever we are.
Stanhope,
yeah.
So when I started training in Denville, and that's where I met Yanni. So then when I realized Yanni had his own school, once my contract was up, I'm like, I'm going to go train with Yanni, because it wasn't that far away from my mom's house. So about 15, 20 minutes. So then I trained there for a long, long time. And then Andy and Mikey opened up their school in Rockaway. So I used to just go train on Mondays. They used to have a pro training session. So I'd go with Yanni and we just, you know, get rounds in. But then I saw Dave was teaching a class. And I was like, you know what? Let me take his class.
At that school?
Yeah, at that school.
Okay.
And it was, you know, kind of a beginner type class. Usually lower belts were in there. And I saw the way Dave was teaching. And I thought, you know what? Let me try to help however I can. Because there was maybe a detail here or there that I was like, hey, did you realize this? And anytime I would pull him aside and ask him stuff after class, he would just listen. He would be like, you know what? That's a good idea. Yeah. I'm going to do it that way from now on. And what I've learned over the past, you know, 13 years is people don't usually take your advice. Maybe 90% of the time, they're just not going to listen to what you say. They might smile and nod.
Right.
They're going to disregard what you say because it's hard.
Yeah.
Like, the things I'm telling them to do, you know, you got to take a step back and realize I'm doing something wrong that I might have been doing for years.
Right.
And now I'm going to switch it.
Yeah.
You know? So he did that, and I recognized that. So I would just, and he was fun to talk to. Me and Dave have always been giggling since we met each other. So not only did he listen to me, he was fun to hang out with. So once he opened the school, I was like, oh, man, this has to succeed.
Right.
You know, I'm going to make sure this does. Because when he initially told me he was going to do it, I'm like, you're crazy.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's a big responsibility. It's a big risk to take.
Yeah.
So I'm like, let me try to help. So I started spending time over there. And then I would just go into my regular patterns of, you know, not training and stuff. And I had nothing linking me to Dave. And I stopped training at Yanni's too. You know, it was both. And then what happened is I started doing this podcast, you know, just for fun. And Dave was the only one who was listening. Just him. I wasn't marketing it or anything. I just had Dave, you know, check this out. I started doing this. And he's like, I love it. You know, and he would say, when's the next episode? When's the next episode? Because I used to just talk to my friends. And, you know, we weren't doing anything crazy. I was just literally having a conversation and recording it just for posterity. Just for, like, instead of making home movies, I have home conversations.
Yeah.
And then at one point he's like, listen, we got to do this for the school. You know, this, we can make this into something. And I was like, ah, you're an idiot. We're not going to do that. So then about 6 months later, I had the bright idea. Dave, maybe we should do a podcast together.
So it was your idea.
That's part of my family. Like, my brother and my dad, we're all kind of similar. Like, we want to really come to it and we really have to convince ourselves that it's right. And then sometimes we forget that other people have already told us this.
Yeah.
And I didn't forget that. I know that it was Dave's idea. And he is the reason that I actually went through with it and started marketing to people. Hey, come listen to this because I think we're doing something special over here.
Yeah.
And I think Dave was right. So now once we start doing the podcast and I talk to him every day of the week, we're texting or something since last April. So now I'm like, all right, well, I'll just go train with Dave and then we could do the podcast after. So now it just turned into, well, I spend most of my time, pretty much all my jiu-jitsu time with Dave. And the thing about jiu-jitsu right now is it's kind of went towards the bottom of my hierarchy of things I have to get better at.
Right.
Like, I like to go for exercise and to get other people better, but I'm right now at this point, I don't care how good I get, which is a problem for training with Yanni, because when you see me train with Yanni, that means I'm really trying to get good, because in my opinion, Yanni is the best teacher I've ever met.
Yeah.
You know, and I have a relationship with him, and I trust with him, so I'll learn better with him than any person on earth.
Right.
And he knows more than Dave. That's what Dave wants. Dave loves when I go to Yanni's because he's like, good, because you're going to come back and
bring it back. Yeah,
bring it back, because of course I would. So eventually I'm going to get the itch again. I always get it. You know, it comes back and I'm like, all right, this is enough. I've had enough of getting my ass kicked by Sam. Let's go get good. You know, let me learn a couple things, tighten up a couple details that I might be getting lax on, and I'll go train with Yanni again. So I have to do it because John Stanley's been going every Friday.
Yeah, I heard. You know,
I should go over
there. Kid is a beast, man. He's incredible.
The reason Yanni calls me names and stuff is because he wants me in the room. He knows that if I'm in the room, everybody's going to get better, including me. And he wants me to get better because Yanni still hasn't given out any black belts yet. And I should have got a long time ago if I wouldn't have taken all these breaks. I know that.
So it's really on you.
It's all on me. Yeah, 100% on me. And I take full responsibility, but it's those excuses again. I keep having enough excuses to just, I don't want to go over there tonight. I'm just going to stay home with the family. That's the number one excuse I use, is the family.
It's a good one.
Yeah, I'll keep letting myself get away with it, because the more I talk to parents that got kids that are, you know, in their teenage years or further, you know, they always say, like, oh, I miss when they were younger. You know, it was harder in a way, but it's so fun.
Yeah.
And it is fun. My daughters make me giggle every day.
Yeah.
So I don't feel that bad about missing out, because jiu-jitsu, it does what it needs to for me. I don't need to be a world champion. I don't need to be going to competitions. I like coming, talking to you guys and laughing at you, and you laugh at me when I'm not doing it right. And when Dave's talking crap to me, it brings fun to the room.
So I guess, like, jiu-jitsu is always going to be there, right? It's not going anywhere, but your girls are going to grow up and you're not going to have that time.
That's the main excuse I'm
using
right now.
It's a good excuse, man. It's a good excuse. You're almost convincing me.
And my wife, too, is great at saying, hey, listen, we can order some pizza tonight. You stay home, you know? That one almost always works on me.
Yeah, I can see how it would. That's pretty cool. No, but you're right, though. I mean, I was lucky enough when I got out of the military, I took a couple years off, and then we had my son. And I legit just stayed home with him. I didn't work. I stayed home with him for the first 2 years, and then it got to the point where Daddy needed to get a job again, and he needed to kind of go in daycare and get some social interaction. But that time with him, I mean, I wouldn't trade that for anything in the world, man. It's amazing. So you got a good excuse. It'd be hard for any parent to make an argument against that. People without kids could probably say,
no, Dave's got two kids and he still hounds me every day of the week.
So it's funny you say that, because I have this whole list of questions, which we're hitting without actually being kind of programmatic.
That's
about
it. I'm a professional.
Yeah.
Unlike Dave. Dave doesn't know how to do it.
That's a knock on Dave. So Dave tends to, like, give you a hard time and be like, he like taunts you almost. Does that motivate you at all when he calls you out for your excuses, when he calls you lazy?
1,000%, because Dave knows me. I've been friends with Dave years and years now. And, you know, I've either explicitly told him this at times or implicitly, or he's just done trial and error to see what gets me going.
Right.
And it is that sometimes negative reinforcement, it has to get me out of it, because sometimes I'm using excuses that aren't as good as the family excuse.
Yeah.
You know, just a straight laziness. Just like, I don't want to. I'm not doing it.
Done.
It's just like a little kid.
Yeah. Well, so listen, I'll just hit these quick, because he sent me a text last night. He goes, where'd they go? Oh, why is Dave saying you're leaving? And was one of the questions. But what his question was one that I was going to ask you. But what he sent last night was, what's wrong with him mentally? Where's it come from? How can we fix it? Why is he so lazy, or what makes him get so lazy?
It's an accumulation of time with my own father. Because just like you said, you spent a lot of time with your son when he was younger. My dad was a fireman, and he didn't have exactly the same schedule when I was a little kid. It was a little different, but he still had a lot of time off, and he never really had a second job. So he spent a lot of time with me and my brother and my sister. And the way he lounges, it rubs off on me because it's fun to lounge and just giggle and to kind of do your own thing. He's the kind of person that would never bother you. Even when I was a little kid, he's never making me do anything. He's like, listen, whatever you want to do, you know, we're in the house. You do whatever you want. Play.
Right.
Play different games with your siblings, play video games, whatever. I'm going to be doing what I want to do. And we're in the same room together. You know, we're cooking and eating together. We're making videos. You know? And that's all we did when I was a kid. And then my mom would come home and she would drop the hammer and say, you got to clean up. You got to do your homework. And it was a good kind of dichotomy, the two of them together. Now, they didn't work out together, but when I was a kid, it showed me that you definitely have to have a balance between work and play. And sometimes I go to play too much because play's fun. And I always like to have fun. One of the stories my mom tells when I was a little kid, when I first was potty trained, is I would have accidents because I was having too much fun playing with my cousins or playing with my brother and sister.
Forget.
And I would try to hold it off to the last second.
You knew you had to go, but you didn't want to give up the fun.
I don't
want to
give up the fun. I still have that to this day. I always want to just push the fun. I never like having time limits on fun. We're done when the fun's over. You know, when they used to say, oh, you could go hang out with your friends for like 2 hours. I was like, what if that's not enough? You know, what if we're in the middle of fun there? So that's why I like that. I like to keep my fun open-ended as possible, which is one of the reasons this podcast sometimes gets a little tough because Dave puts me in these tight little windows and I want to make sure we get, you know, we hit the peak fun and we get it recorded.
Yeah.
So that's where the professionalism comes in a little bit, where I have to kind of get better at coming in with specific topics so that we've definitely hit the points before that we turn the mics off. Because sometimes we have to turn the mics off before we're done.
Yeah.
But that's because of Dave.
I'll say this, and I think it was Christine and I might have had this conversation, or maybe you guys may have even talked about it on the podcast. You did at one point. I like it when you guys get on a subject and you're hitting the points. And what I really like is when you actually come back full circle. You know, because there have been a few times where it's like
cliffhangers.
It just jumps the track and never comes back. So when you come full circle, I like that. What do you think? First of all, how is the traction on the podcast going? You're up to 67 episodes now or so, plus yours.
Well, 65 for To the Death, and this is 22. So we're getting close to 100, which is a nice number for me. I'm going to feel really good after we get 100 published, because, you know, if you listen to our podcast, we've talked about the different numbers that are important, and most people don't get past their first episode. Most people make an episode, and then that's it. More than 10 episodes?
You guys have quite a catalog. What about the listenership? Is it going up at all?
It's been just steady.
It's kind of steady?
It really depends on guests.
Yeah.
In the beginning, we were getting a lot more listens, probably twice as many listens, because you have the guests, and they promote it, and then people that haven't heard of us, they'll come and listen. And sometimes they won't stick around. Most times they don't. But we have Dave doesn't like when I talk about the numbers, but it's, you know, we're a little less than 100, just
consistently.
Yeah. We have people listen. And, you know, in the grand scheme of things, compared to other podcasts, that's basically zero.
Right.
But compared to, you know, what we started with. You know,
well, yeah, that's what I was kind of getting at compared to where you started.
We started like 20 people. You know, the first episode is always going to be a big one. We had like, you know, 100 the first couple weeks. But then it dropped in half to 50 on episode 2. And then it went down a little bit until we started getting guests. And then, you know, we've kind of just been, you know, stable because we're not great at marketing, neither me or Dave. And we've asked Gary in private and stuff, and we just have to kind of get out there a little more, maybe put a little money into ads and stuff like that. But right now I'm not really in the marketing mode. I'm still new at this.
Yeah.
2 years of podcasting is basically nothing. When I have 1,000 episodes and I still only have 100, I still only have 100 listeners. All right, then we're gonna actually have to start making some moves here to get some more. But I doubt it. I doubt if we have 1,000 episodes, we're only gonna have 100 listeners per episode.
Yeah.
But even if we do, it doesn't really bother me because this is all recorded and we can go back and listen to it and just, I can show my daughters like, look, this is the amount of time it takes. If I do 100 episodes, that's 1,000 hours of work that I've put in. Not Dave, because Dave just has to record, but for me to edit this and go through it and listen to it over and over again, 1,000 hours is nothing to sneeze at. Like, if you put 1,000 hours into anything, if I could show them, like, if you put 1,000 hours into something, you could really make yourself something. And if you do the 10,000, like the guy says, you'll be an expert.
Oh, yeah.
Because
I'm
getting closer to my 10,000 in jiu-jitsu, and I'm pretty good at it.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I'm a little lazy, but for teaching purposes, I know enough to teach and have fun with you guys, and that's all that really matters to me.
Speaking of that, I was actually going to ask you this. Would you consider, like, if you had the opportunity to be, like, a full-time instructor?
It was one of my original goals when I was about a purple belt to just got my brown belt. It was one of my goals is to open my own school under Yanni or maybe go in with the Ani and be a full-time instructor. And the more I've done this and having kids and stuff, I don't want to put all that time into jiu-jitsu. That's kind of why I've stopped training as much as I used to, is because jiu-jitsu, I feel like I'm getting close to the point where I have enough expertise in it to where I don't want to put all my eggs in that basket anymore. You know, I want to put it towards podcasting, maybe just the arts in general, just creative in general. I've never really put my full effort into creativity because I thought creativity was like, you have to make music or you have to make paintings or drawings and stuff. But I didn't know that conversation is an art form until recently. So now I'm trying to put a lot of my effort into that, because I really do enjoy it. Like, coming here and talking to you, it gives me butterflies because this is something new for me. You know, we've never had a conversation like this before.
No, we haven't. Not
and
at all.
It can go anywhere.
Yeah, totally.
And then
can.
When I go back and edit this, it gives me another opportunity even more to just fine tune it, to just make it a little tighter, to make it really easy to listen to. And I can say exactly what I want, because I've said things on this podcast before that I'm like, I don't want that. And I'll just cut it out and you'll never hear it.
Right.
Because that's not what I want to put out there.
Right.
When you hear a podcast that I've published, I've thought a lot. I've listened to the words said at least 3 times. And yeah, I'm sure that I want to put that out there.
Yeah, it's cool. You get to curate your own content and then put it out as your own product. So there's got to be some, like, you got to have a sense of pride, I would think, when it gets put out.
Sure. I want everybody to know, but I'm not the guy that likes to beat my chest too much.
Right.
You know, when I used to compete, you'll never see me, you know, exclaim either way. If I lose or I win, you'll never see me go, yeah, or like slam the mat or beat my chest or point at the crowd, you know?
Yeah.
I always looked up to Barry Sanders, who would never spike the football. He would just hand the football to the ref. All right, next play. This isn't over yet. We got more to do here.
Yeah, yeah.
I always appreciate that mentality, and I try to stick to that.
Yeah, that's a cool way to approach it, I think.
But what happens is it's hard to market that kind of personality.
Yeah,
because
I
want to tell people how hard I'm working, and I want to prove it. I want you to listen to this and just know, like, oh, man, he did a lot of work in here. Because some people, you know, they don't think about it. They're just like, oh, he's got a podcast, and they listen to it, and then, you know, it was all right.
It's hard to gauge that, though.
It's really hard.
Because, like, when Dave and I did the one and then you edited it, I could tell in certain spots, probably not all of them, where it had been edited, because I was the one in the conversation with Dave, where I think if I would have just listen to something, you know, before I understood what the editing kind of meant, it's just like, oh, this was just kind of a natural conversation. This is kind of how it all played out, when in reality, you were able to go in and kind of adjust it and make it better.
Sure. I mean, you're not a professional talker. You know?
Correct.
So, but if you wanted to, you could build towards it. That's what I'm trying to do right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Me and Dave, I can put out an unedited episode of me and Dave, and it would still be 90% of, maybe not 90, 80% of what we put out, because we've been getting better over time.
Sure,
the first episode, we recorded 2 hours. I cut it down in half.
Yeah.
You know, because we're brand new at doing it.
Right.
So eventually I want to get to the point where we almost never have to edit things out, but maybe not, because the edit really does, it just makes it a smooth listen. You know, there's never a lull in the action. There's never those awkward pauses. When we do interviews again, eventually, if Dave ever wants to, when we talk to a stranger, there's always going to inevitably be those little periods because we don't know each other. You know, when you're talking to a stranger, it's hard to kind of keep that pace.
Yeah, it totally is. Like, even now with you and I, like, I'm trying to think a step ahead so that I don't, like, sit there and have a blank spot in my head and the conversation just kind of dies down.
But what the good things is, you could take a second, take a breath. You know, even in the middle of your sentences, you could take, because I'll take it out.
And yeah, yeah.
Sometimes if you know that you have that safety net, maybe you'll take a little bit more of a chance. It's like if you're scaling a building. If you know you got a rope clipped on your back and you're not going to fall off, you'll take bigger chances then.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah, that makes total sense. Yeah, no, that makes total sense. Do you think it's going to continue to be like the two channels with the To the Death and the Sweaty Eddie? Or is that kind of the path you're going to continue to go? Or is it anything going to change there?
The way I talk to Dave about it, which he doesn't like, is I see To the Death as his podcast and I produce it. And I'm a co-host to it. But at the end of the day, there's been times where he wants to take something out that I don't think it's a big deal. But you know what? Let him have this.
Right.
You know, he'll have 60% of this and I'll have 40. And I'm happy to do it. If he doesn't want to have guests, good. I don't care about that.
Yeah.
But when it comes to this podcast, I have 100% say. Nobody's going to tell me what I can or can't say except for my own conscience.
Right.
And I like to have that little separation. And I might actually move mine to a different channel eventually, like a different RSS feed. And I've been looking into it. So yeah, eventually they're going to split off from each other. Just not right now.
Do you have your wife listen to, or does she want to listen to any of it? I've listened to a podcast between the two of you before.
When I talk to my wife about it, the thing is, a lot of things I talk about on the podcast, I've already had conversations either at work with my friends or high school friends or my wife especially. We've already had the conversation, so she doesn't like hearing it again.
Yeah. Makes sense, right?
Sometimes there's specific episodes where like, all right, you have to listen to this because you haven't heard any of this yet. Sometimes I haven't told you yet, or maybe I thought of it on the spot and you should hear this. Usually I'll just play the funniest parts. As I'm editing, I'm like, all right, listen to this 10 seconds, and she'll get a little giggle. But that's about it with
her. All right. Does she enjoy doing the podcast with you? I don't know how many you've had her on with. I know for sure I listened to one recently.
So when I originally started doing the podcast, before To The Death, I just had my own private podcast. It was just me and her.
Okay.
You know, we did about 30, 40 together.
Oh, wow.
And then on Sweaty Eddie, we've done maybe 10. She's done. But she doesn't really enjoy it. She does it to make me happy.
She's being a good wife. Good for her.
She really is, because I think she's reciprocating, because I consider myself a good husband and a good father, so she pays it forward.
There it is. All right, cool. All right, so, you know, I've listened to a couple of different episodes where you've talked about kind of the firefighter stuff. I hope you don't mind. I find this kind of interesting. And then one recently where you did the mashup and your dad was on, and you know, I thought it was interesting to me, because I have no clue how any of that would ever start. So like, how would someone straight out of, I don't know, high school, college, even go down a path of being a firefighter in your neighborhood?
Well, in New Jersey, there's a bunch of different cities that are connected to civil service. So you have to see when the test is coming out, and usually these cities usually line up when their tests come out, and you just have to live in that city and you have to take a test, and depending how well you do on the test, they put you on the list. And when the city needs firefighters, they'll go to the list and they'll just pull from the top of the list. They'll do background checks and they'll skip certain people that don't actually live in the city,
right?
Or if they have too bad criminal records, you know. And then you have to take a psychological if you don't pass that test. So there's a bunch of different hoops you have to jump through,
right,
to get there, because thousands of people take the test every year,
right,
or every time it comes around. It only comes around every 3 years. So you have to do well on the list and you have to live in the city. So it usually takes about 5 years. That's how long it took me to live in the city from start to finish.
All right.
Of being on the job for a while. And that's it.
Well, your dad had mentioned something about built a house for you so you could go down that path. I don't know that I fully understood that.
He's very hyperbolic and he over exaggerates. What he did was, him and my mom got divorced and he had a choice. He could have moved out here where we are right now.
Right.
Had a nice house on the lake and just chilled, wrote out his time, and then, you know, done what he's doing now, live in Florida. But I told him when I was in high school, like, listen, I want to be a firefighter. So he said, okay, if you want to do this, you're going to have to live in this city. So I might as well just buy a house there. So he bought a house. The market crashed.
Oh, yeah. You did say you bought it at the worst time.
And he lived in there 3 years without me, waiting for me to have to move in. So then I moved in. And he decided to move out with his second wife. And I was in the house alone with my grandfather. And it was just me and him. And it was a little tough for me because it was like a culture shock. Because I grew up where my mom would do everything for me.
Right.
She cut my pancakes until I was 10 years old. So I never did my laundry. I never had to go food shopping. So when I was living by myself, I didn't even know how to take care of myself. So it was kind of a learning curve to figure out, all right,
yeah,
I need to start doing stuff for myself. So it was kind of a good thing, but I kind of wish my dad did stay and hang out with me to give me a little bit of guidance. But it was ultimately good, because trial by fire, if you can get through it, is probably the best way to learn anything.
Oh, yeah. Throw you in the deep end of the pool and you got to swim, right? I thought it was cool, though, like listening to your dad and you, kind of just the dialogue between the two of you. Like, if I, at some point, when the episode started, I didn't realize that was your dad. And then obviously I figured it out midway through or whenever it was. But you wouldn't know, like, I think it seems, I thought it was kind of a cool relationship, the way that two of you guys can, like, man to man kind of thing. I never had that with my dad because he died so young. And then, you know, my son is very young, and I hope that one day that I can sit down and just have, like, these conversations with him where you're talking about the real world, you know, on the same level kind of thing. So I thought that was pretty cool. So what about your promotion recently? How about that? Congratulations on that, by the way.
The promotion, it was kind of wrapped into the whole even becoming a firefighter. Like, when my father was a captain as well, and he used to teach other guys how to become captain. That's kind of in our nature. Like, once we learn it, we're like, oh my God, we got to show everybody this.
Share it,
like, I know how to do this. you could do this too. Like, it's not, it seems like it's not special. Like, we always downplay it. Like, me and my dad, we downplay what we've done, and we think anybody can accomplish it. And maybe it's true to an extent, but if you don't want it,
right,
you can't accomplish
100%
it.
100% true.
So he was trying to market to different towns, different fire departments, and he was sending me out to kind of give a pitch to get guys to come back to him. So I was going around talking to these different guys and kind of giving them the pitch, like, listen, if you take this test seriously, you can make everybody around you safer, you'll get a nice pay raise, you won't be at the bottom of the barrel anymore. All you got to do is, you know, study this thing. So there's a whole system. And I couldn't get anybody to sign up. And I remember thinking, like, oh, when I get on the fire department, if I ever do, I'm going to take this so serious, because it really, it's simple but difficult.
Right.
But there is a path, and my dad's shown me the path, so I'm going to take this path. And it, from that day until I got promoted, you know, a couple weeks ago, was 12 years.
Okay.
And it's a 12-year goal that got accomplished. It feels great to check that off the list. But there is a little anxiety, like, all right, now what? Or like, what's next? I can't just coast. I've never been able to just be satisfied, because I think satisfaction is the reason I don't go to jiu-jitsu right now. I'm satisfied with my jiu-jitsu career. That's why I don't show up to class as much as I should.
Get complacent, right?
Yeah, I don't want to be complacent in too many areas.
Right.
Because then that's when my depression would kick in.
I would think that coming into this, because now you're responsible for people, right? I got this from the podcast I just listened to, the last episode. There's a lot that kind of goes into that, right? There's a lot that rests on your shoulders, and a lot to learn, and a lot to, are you in your position now, are you talking to guys that have been firefighters longer than you? Like, are you responsible for firefighters that have been doing this longer than you?
Sure. The fire department right now is getting younger and younger. More people are retiring, and the newer guys are coming on. So I'm kind of right in the middle. There's about 400 or 500 firefighters, and I'm probably in the middle of seniority. Now that I'm a captain, it puts me towards the top 10% of seniority. And yeah, there's definitely guys that are around your age that I'm in charge of.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit weird. So I kind of have to play, their personality. I got to really be good at reading them and interacting with them. That's what this podcast has actually done well too, is when I talk to somebody, I'm getting better at reading them, or trying to steer it in a way that they want to go.
Yeah.
You know, where it won't hurt us.
Right.
If they're going to go down a path that will get them hurt or me hurt, then I'll have to rearrange it. But 95% of the job is not dangerous. It's just day-to-day stuff. We're in the firehouse, we're going on calls, you know, false alarm stuff, and I'm just dealing with day-to-day stuff just like you would at an office job.
Right.
So you have to kind of manage egos in that way. Now, when it comes to the firefighting, I don't think I'll have too much trouble. You know, it is complicated because it depends how much experience that guy has, how much time have I spent working with him, what's his reputation like.
Right.
Okay, because some people can make their own decisions and I could just observe it and let them go. And some people need direction, want direction. They want you to tell them. So I have to read which type of person I have there.
Yeah.
And then I can give them direction if I have to. And if they have a lot of time on the job, maybe I don't have to give them as much direction. I'll just ask them, like, hey, what do you think here? And if they say something that's pretty close to the right answer, good. Have fun with it.
Dude, I like that you're saying that because, you know, as in the military, I progressed relatively quickly. And I ended up in a managerial position where there were guys that had lots and lots and lots of seniority on me, but I outranked them because I just progressed fast. And that was what a lot of what you just said. It's 100% true. So you're going to do well, I think, because I went through that in my career. And you're right. You have to read them. You have to kind of play it the right way. There's no one specific way to do it every single time for every single person, right? We're all different. So that's, I like that. That's pretty cool.
I think it has to do with jiu-jitsu too. Like when I'm teaching somebody half guard, I've taught half guard to over 100 people, I think.
Yeah.
Sat down and at least spent 5 to 10 minutes explaining, you know, different details of it.
Right.
And every person is a little different. And when I was new to teaching, I would always give too much information and overwhelm them, and they would never get it at all.
Yeah.
So now I've tailored my teaching style, plus who am I talking to?
Right.
How much time have they spent with me? How much time have they spent in jiu-jitsu, period?
Right.
You know, and that's helped me kind of, you know, read people too. So all these different leadership tactics come into parenting.
Yeah.
It's all kind of similar. So it's fun that it's starting to come together. It's scary because of the job that I have. Like if I was an office manager, I wouldn't get butterflies like I do
being a firefighter. Totally. Yeah, man. I mean, you could potentially have somebody's life in your hand, like for real.
My own life.
Yeah. Never mind your own too. Yeah, absolutely. That's cool how you just brought that back to jiu-jitsu. I've heard other people say that before, how it can be, we talked about it already, how it can be applied elsewhere.
Yeah, the thing is, you're talking about how you got into jiu-jitsu. Podcasting definitely helped you, give you that final push. What's cool is I didn't start listening to podcasts till 2015. So I was already, you know, 7-8 years into jiu-jitsu.
Right.
And it was awesome hearing them talk about it. Like, oh yeah, I did go through that. Yes, yeah. This is, it was like a beautiful sales pitch that I never tried to make before, or maybe I had when I was younger, but they had it said so well. And when you listen to somebody like Jocko tie military into jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Into, now I'm doing into parenting. It's like, oh man, these guys are kind of giving me an outline to help sell it to other people, because it does help overall.
Oh yeah, totally does. I think like Christina was the one that told me about this podcast. So I started listening, and I had, like I said, I'd already started listening to, I think this might've been the one that, if it wasn't what pushed me over the edge, it definitely helped, because I told her what got me into the class was I told her I was going to go, right? Like I'd been going to polos and, you know, knew her for a long time, and she was telling me about this, and Zach had been going, and then finally I said it out loud that I was going to go. And then I'm like, man, now you kind of have to go, right? But she had told me about the podcast. She's like, yeah, they started the podcast, you know. And I'm like, oh, cool, I'll have to check it out. So somewhere around that time, it all just kind of came together, and I walked through the door scared like a little kid, man. I'm telling you, like, that it was just even sometimes still I'm sitting outside, I'm like, why am I doing this? I'm going to go in and I'm going to get beat up. But then I walk out, I'm like, man, I was so awesome. And I did get beat up.
Yeah, one thing that Yanni's always said is you never regret doing an extra round.
Yeah.
You know, you always regret not doing the extra round, as long as you don't get hurt.
Like, totally, yeah.
It's just walking in there and going through the class, you never regret it. You always feel great coming out. It's just so hard to step over the threshold.
It is. It really is. I mean, that's one of the most challenging things that I've done since, I mean, gosh, I don't even know, but it's definitely each day is a challenge to walk across the, you know, go through the threshold, get in class. I'm glad to hear that Yanni said that, though, because it's happened to me a few times. Like, I generally will have to sit out around just because I'm so exhausted, I can't breathe. I'll sit out around and I'll think, you know, I'll get the next one. And then, like, class is over. I'm like, why didn't I just do the round, you know? But so it's good to hear that from an expert, that that's kind of normal.
Don't call me an expert. That's, you know, he's the expert, yeah.
All right, cool. So firefighter, back to that stuff. You just became a captain. Like, how long until you feel like you're going to be comfortable and be an expert as a captain?
That's a great question. An expert as a captain? A long time, years and years. I mean, I have 22 years, if I want to do 30 years, left to go. So I'm going to be an officer in some capacity for the next 20 plus years.
Yeah.
So I got a long time to go. I want to get the fundamentals down. That's the way I approach life, jiu-jitsu, parenting, is what is the minimum that my conscience will allow? Like, what do I need to get done? What can I get done and know now?
Right.
To get me started. Where's my foundation? So jiu-jitsu, I was never into the flashy stuff. I don't care about subs. I still don't care about them. Right. How can I protect myself so I never get subbed?
Right.
And I can always end up in pretty good position to attack.
Right.
So that's what I'm trying to do as a captain. Is I got to learn the base level of paperwork. I got to learn my base level responsibilities when we're in the firehouse and at a fire. And then once I feel like I have those cemented, now we could start getting into different types of drills that I could do.
Right.
And I could push my mind further. I can get in the book. Like, the more you get into reading about firefighting, it's never ending. It's just like jiu-jitsu. There's always things to be learned, whether it's the knowing the streets, knowing the type of buildings in your area. Right now I'm bouncing around a whole city, so I can't really do that stuff yet. So what can I do is learn how to read people, learn how to have certain conversations. I haven't run into any turbulence yet, which I know is inevitable.
Certainly.
So I can't know that until I run into it. So that stuff is just going to have to wait and see kind of thing. And those are the things that make me nervous, is the sink or swim moments where you can't really prepare for it. Like, when I first became a firefighter, the number one thing on my agenda is, when am I going to get my first fire? How am I going to act? You can't know until you're there. This is why I tell all the new guys when they come out. Like, I know that you're gung-ho right now and you want fire, 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 but you can't know how you're going to act until it happens.
Right.
So I still haven't caught my real first fire as a captain. I know that's going to come. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
How am I going to act? Who am I going to be with? It's nervous because I can't know. It's impossible to know.
Right.
So how can I make myself ready for that moment? So that's the thing I think about right now.
What, have you had like a super scary moment as a firefighter, like a real bad fire that just like you walked away from thinking like,
I don't want to do this anymore.
Thing, or we don't want to do this anymore. Yeah.
most of the fires is maybe if I'm climbing up, you know, 3-4 stories on the ladder and I have to cut a hole in the roof. That used to be real scary for me. The first times doing things, those are the scary parts for me.
Yeah.
Once I've cut a couple roofs, once I've put a couple fires out with the hose line, you know, once I've been in a really hot fire, when it happens again, it feels like it's just like a little less than it was last time. So I guess just the firsts, those are my scariest moments.
Yeah. You know, I could totally see that. Speaking of firsts, how's it going with lugging all your equipment around in your car now?
It's annoying. I was just talking to my wife today. She had to go to Home Depot to pick up mulch. And she's like, I want to take the big car. I'm like, but all my stuff's in there. It's literally stuffed to the brim. I'm like, you could take it all out and put it in the garage. I'm not doing that for you. So she went. She's like, come on, how much stuff could it be? So she goes out and opens the car. She's like, oh, too much stuff. So she fit it in the other car. But it's going to be probably 6 months to a year of just bouncing around like that. I'm going to be living out of my car.
Okay. But do you have now set days that you're working?
Yeah, I have set days. So
just different locations.
I just have to call. Like tomorrow I have to work. I'm going to call in the morning and say, hey, where am I going today? And then they just send me out.
All right. Okay. Cool. So was there something about a helmet? I think Dave said you need to get a new helmet.
Yeah. So when my grandfather, not my dad's dad, my mom's dad was a firefighter in New York City. And I have his helmet. I wear it still. And the NFPA standards were a little bit different back in the
probably
70s.
Probably so, yeah.
So I've been wearing his helmet because my dad wore it. And I've been wearing it for 6-7 years now. And it hasn't got me hurt. And I feel like, I don't know, it's like a placebo, but I feel like it's a good luck charm.
Yeah.
That helmet's seen more fires than anybody that's on my job.
Yeah.
So I feel like if it was good for my grandfather, good for my dad, it's good for me too.
That's pretty awesome, man. I mean, hopefully it is safe enough. Obviously, like you said, the standards have changed, but that's pretty cool to be able to carry on that kind of that legacy. That's pretty cool. There was something else I wanted to ask you about. I can't remember what it was now. Oh, are Dave and your wife like really friends or not?
Friends, huh? Depends on what your definition of
cordial,
friends are.
At least
they're cordial. When they're in person, they're cordial. Dave definitely rubs my wife the wrong way because Dave
seems like he tries to.
I think he assumed that her sense of humor, her sensibility was very similar to mine, and it's not. She doesn't like negative reinforcement at all. She doesn't like to be made fun of, you know, even by me. Like if I push it too far all the time. Dave really pushes it too far because he's never built that trust with her to begin with. And he only looks at it from his perspective. He's just trying to be silly. She should know that I'm just joking around, you know, but she doesn't take it that way. So,
well, I could see how that is because like, I'm asking you because I don't know, like I'm listening to him joke around and sometimes it's hard for me. And it's only on the podcast, like when in class or when I've had conversations with him, it's no big deal. But listening to him on all these different episodes, it's like, is he serious or is he not? Like the other time, there was one recently where he said that I had said something about you, and I was like, no, I didn't. And then he goes, oh, I'm just kidding. I'm like, Jesus,
yeah,
man. You know?
Those are the kind of jokes he likes to play. He likes to push the envelope in that way. My wife doesn't appreciate that. So, I don't know. She wants an apology. Dave isn't into apologies because he doesn't think he did anything wrong. Me, I don't care either way because I think it's funny.
All good. So let's bring it back to... let's bring it back to jiu-jitsu. What's the number one most annoying thing for you in our class?
You're trying to make me call people out?
No, not individual people. Like, but is there like a trend, or is it something that we do, or I do, or anyone does? Is there something in there that just kind of like, man, I wish this was different, or I wish they'd listen more, or not do this, or do this? I don't know. Maybe there's nothing.
It's a really open-ended question because they're, what do you mean, teaching style, or the way the students are receiving it, or the way that...
Probably the students, among the group of students.
I don't see any problems because I've been in a bunch of different jiu-jitsu rooms. I don't. You've ever trained outside of Dave's?
Never. Nope.
Okay, so you have no idea.
Except the living room floor here and there, but no.
So you don't know what it's like out there. The room that Dave has cultivated and I've tried to help cultivate is the exact room I want to be in.
Nice.
I don't really have any problems with it. I just want people to be on the mats as much as possible. The only time Dave gets flustered is if there's not 20 people on the mat.
Yeah.
You know, he just wants as many people there as possible and just training. As long as nobody's getting hurt, that's really the whole goal. That's my whole goal is showing up there. I want to show up. I want to laugh. I want you guys to learn. And I want us to go home healthy. That's it.
Yeah, that's cool. No, I think Dave's comment was something similar, if I remember. I think what he said was... What bothers him the most is if someone says that they can't.
Right, right.
I think...
nobody says that to me.
Yeah.
You know, I let people off the hook. You know, if you want to take a round off, I'm the guy that's like, take a round off. Dave wants you...
I need it.
Dave is the type of person that loves to push, and he pushes too far. in my opinion, sometimes. That's why he gets hurt more than I get hurt, because Dave really, he's trying to make the most maximum effort out of his time.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
So I like to be a little bit of like, you know, you don't have to go that hard, especially for you. Listen, you're not trying to prove anything to anybody. You're trying to set the example for your son. As long as you're on the mats and you come home healthy and you're happy, that's going to set the example. And that's all you need to do. That's all, in my opinion, you should focus on. And I think most people in the room are doing that.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I'd say so, just from the, you know, the time I've spent in there. Number one piece of advice for a brand new white belt.
Just show up.
Same thing on the mats.
That's what, hey, listen, yep. You talk about Jocko. Jocko is one of my great inspirations for leadership. I mean, all the stuff I'm regurgitating is his.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's in his words. I've learned it a lot of different ways. My father's always been into self-help. I mean, he was listening to Anthony Robbins in the 90s and just played it on a loop in the car when we used to go to all his softball games and stuff. And I would just, you know, hear it. And eventually when I was, you know, a teenager, I was like, all right, let me try to actually put this into practice. Now, I'd only get up to day five or six and then quit over and over again. But just, you get the psychology of it, and then you start to learn psychology from other places, and you're like, oh, wait, I heard this before, you know, and Jocko was kind of like the final form of that. Like, I love the way that he says this, because he'll never let you make any of those excuses. You're right. Having a hard time? Good.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Totally. Yeah.
But you got to show up. If you don't show up, you have no shot. It's like the Wayne Gretzky. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Correct.
I always love Wayne Gretzky. Yeah. Barry Sanders. Like, those are the guys that I looked up to. I want to be the best. Like, what does it take to be the best? No excuses. Just show up. Now, to be the ultimate best, you need to train smart. And some of the mentors I'm listening to now are talking about how hard work is not the end-all be-all. Like, you can't just be a hard worker. Like, I feel like this is what Dave runs into a little bit, is he just thinks he could work his way through it. Just like, if I work a little harder, you know, I'll get through it. But I think that's when you're going to come up with injuries. And in terms of, like, podcasting, is you're just going to stunt your own growth.
Yeah.
Because you have to just find ways to tweak and be a little bit more efficient. Like, I used to edit this and it used to take me 8 to 10 hours per episode.
Jesus. Just
to edit, just like sitting there cutting and
wow.
Stuff like that. Now I've cut it down to maybe 2 hours because I've found little tricks, little hotkeys and stuff. You got to find out a way to work smarter and just keep the same. Like, you don't want to work too hard on the same thing, because then you don't have time to do
to
different
progress
things.
To learn anything else.
That's
right.
One of the problems I have with the podcast right now is I want to spend more time talking on the microphone and less time behind the scenes. So the way you have to, it's a scaling problem. So I need to learn how to scale. I need to learn how to talk to different people that are doing the same kinds of things that I'm doing. That's why I want to do the stand up is not to be a stand up comedian. I want to go meet people that are trying to be funny full time.
Yeah.
Because they usually have podcasts of their own, and I want to try to just get in that world, and I want to impress them, because I think I'm impressive in certain ways, and I think it translates. I want to show them that I have the work ethic and I have the smarts to read and understand and listen, you know, and I'm not going to bring an ego into it. So I want to find like-minded people, because I have found like-minded people in jiu-jitsu and firefighting, you know, but they're not trying to be funny. I want to find the people that are trying to be funny too, because I want to make people laugh. That's my number one goal right now, until it changes.
Laughter's good medicine, man. It's good mental health medicine even, you know?
I know there's something about funny people. Like, my whole life, I've been a shy person. I never was the center of attention when I was a young kid, but I used to always gravitate, just kind of nudge up to the person that was doing that.
Yeah.
And laugh. And I didn't even understand what I was doing, but people that are trying to be funny, they love people that laugh at them.
Oh, of course. That's what they want.
That's
yeah.
What I was doing. I was being around these funny people, and I was hoping that maybe it would rub off on me subconsciously. I didn't even know I was doing this until recently when I started looking back at it. Is I want to be around the funny people because I want to be that person. I would love to be the center of attention when I have the things to say. I don't want to be the center of attention if I don't know what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah, of course not. No, then you look
so that's
like
why to go tonight, I kind of have an idea what I want to say, but you can't know until you go there. Stand-up is like a conversation. You're having a conversation with the audience. So you need to pay attention to them. Make eye contact with them. Read them.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that because it's scary. I don't know
it's
them.
It's a scary thing.
They don't
yeah.
know my sense of humor. They don't know yeah. who I am. It's just, it's like a cold call sales.
Yeah.
That's the scariest thing.
It's crazy. I remember I had to do a lot of public speaking. They teach you in the military. And first time I got up there in front of the and this was a class. It was a very controlled environment. They all had to do the same thing that I had to do. So you were not in a hostile environment at all. And I freaking froze, you know, and it took me just going through that over and over and over again to where I'm comfortable enough I could get up on a stage and talk to, you know, 500-600 people in a, you know, formation or whatever. But it took a long time to be able to do that. And it's still not fun. Like, even when I have to talk at work now to like the execs, I hate it. So for you to get up on stage with, like, you don't know, this could be a hostile crowd. You don't know, probably not, but, you know, so that's it's going to take some gumption to get through it, but I think that's pretty cool.
I have to do it. I mean, yeah. That's it, because what you're saying is, yeah, I get a little nervous when I have to talk to my supervisors, or if I have to talk, because I was helping at the training academy teach the new kids, and there was about 30, 40 of them, and I used to have to talk to them, teach a class to them, and they made me nervous.
Yeah.
But to go on stage and to have your own, these are all my own words. There's nobody else's words. This is all on me. If you don't think this is funny, it's 100% my fault, and I can't, there's no excuses that I can pull out of my back pocket and be like, ah, it's their fault or whatever. That's what makes it scary, because it's 100% on me. I hate that when it's brand new. It's
yeah.
Same thing as jiu-jitsu. Like, if I don't do well at this, whose fault is it?
Yeah, but once you do that first one, though, I think, like, when I walked through the door to do jiu-jitsu for the first time, I'll never have that experience again. The first time you do it is the first time you do it forever and ever and ever, right? So I know what it feels like to have done it that very first time. So you'll know it tonight.
Well,
you know?
I've been on stage before. So I've been on stage 3 times. And the last time I almost passed out. I was so nervous. That's how nervous I was. And I'm afraid of that feeling. It's afraid.
Yeah, but it
fear.
Won't be as bad this time, I wouldn't think, right?
You're probably right. But in my head, I'm like, oh, no, it's going to be just as bad. I'll probably throw up before I go. No, because the last time I went on stage, it wasn't great. You know, that's because it's not going to be. The people aren't usually going to laugh because you don't know what you're doing yet.
Yeah.
So it's like going to jiu-jitsu and getting tapped. You know you're going to get tapped every roll. There's something about getting tapped that doesn't bother me at all.
Right.
Especially when I was younger. It's like, all right, whatever, I'll tap and then we'll go again. I can't get into that same mindset when it's like, if they don't laugh, well, that's not a big deal. I don't know how to really, like, believe it. Like, I know that's the right thing. I shouldn't care what they think. I got to get the feedback. I got to learn. I got to make mistakes, because when you make mistakes, you know you're learning, because
right.
Something's got to change now.
Right, absolutely.
I can't justify it to myself. I can't make myself believe it. Like, I still think, no, it really matters. Like, they have to laugh here. If they don't laugh, what am I doing here?
Are you taking anyone else along with you to plant in the crowd?
I asked somebody, and they didn't want to go. So I was like, all right, you know what? I'm going to stop that too. It has to just be me. I got to show up, because really what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to make new friends, basically.
Yeah.
Or I'm trying to learn. I'm trying to find a mentor in comedy. In jiu-jitsu, it's easy, because when you show up, the teacher's the mentor.
Done.
Just listen to what he says.
Yeah.
Comedy is not exactly like that.
Yeah.
I don't know any of these people.
Yeah.
They're not claiming to be experts, especially if you're going to an open mic. It's just like, all right, these people have probably been doing it 5-6 years. You know, they know some stuff I don't, so maybe I can learn from them. Maybe they don't want to talk to me. Maybe they don't want
to
teach me.
They got to like you at some point in order to do that, right? In order to mentor you, teach you, talk to you.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Finding mentors is a very tricky thing, and I'm still learning it right now. In jiu-jitsu, it's simpler. Fire department's simpler. You know, when whoever's in charge of you, you know, you could choose. There's plenty of different leaders. You get to pick which ones you want to latch onto and try to reach out to. You have multiple chances. Same thing with comedy, I guess. I just don't know any person.
Yeah.
You know, there's nobody I know that's in the stand-up scene. So it's like a complete fresh start.
Yeah, so you're totally going to be the amateur.
Yeah.
The beginner again. That's awesome, man. Well, good luck with that. Hopefully it works out.
Hopefully I go. I'm still haven't convinced myself I'm going to go.
No, hopefully you go. Just go. Just go.
Well, my wife said to just go and sit and watch. And I've been looking online, like, how to, you know, what you should do, like tips for your first time. Because I'll still look at it as the first time. And they say, you know, don't go on stage. Just go watch. And in my mind, I'm like, if you're going to go, you know, what
get
are you doing?
There.
Just get up there.
Yeah,
just do
get
it.
Get up there. Have some egg thrown at you.
I wish. That would be fun. What happens is you get up there and people just look at you. There's no booze,
like,
or nothing. They're just staring at you.
Okay, what are you getting at here?
Yeah, something. Say something funny.
Yeah. Well, cool. I'm looking forward to hearing the feedback of how that goes, assuming that it goes.
Yeah. The reason I keep talking about it is because I don't want to embarrass myself. I'll embarrass myself into doing it. Just like you said, like, once you say it out loud, like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
I said it out loud. Like, let's do it now.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to propel myself into action.
Well, now you have to do it because you told more people than just me.
I know, I did.
Now you got to do it. Just like I had to walk in to the gym after I told Christina I was going to do jiu-jitsu. I was really kicking myself that night for telling her
that.
Yeah,
one of the things that's what I use for motivation. Like, I want to make you proud. I want to make Dave proud. I want to make everybody that listens to this proud.
Yeah.
And I think you would be if I went up there and did it.
Oh, yeah, totally. I would 100% support you. And I, you know, think, wow, it takes guts to get up there, right? I wouldn't do it. There's not a chance I would do it. But to see somebody go through it, even with, like, the promotion to captain, you didn't have to seek that out.
Oh, no,
absolutely
not.
You could have sat back and chill and been happy out where you were. So, I mean, when I heard about that, that was one of the things that really intrigued me more about you, is to try and get, because it's not like you're just like, oh, I'm kind of coasting, I'm good, you know, I got a job, I'm good at jiu-jitsu, you know, got a wife, kids, everything's, you're like, no, I'm going to get better.
More.
I'm going to do more.
Why
yeah.
not?
And you're going to learn more and get better. So I like being around people like that. What I generally find for myself is when I'm around people like that, it makes me better too in a multitude of different aspects, you know?
Sure. That's a lesson that I've really consciously understood in the past year. I think subconsciously we know more than we can reach back there. Like when you can put it into words and truly understand it, I mean, that's when you really get better. And that exact sentiment is what I've done in my own personal life. I'm starting to push aside the people that I think their bad habits have no choice, even if they rub off a little bit. I don't even want that little rub.
Yeah,
I want the good rub. I come here and I'm like, all right, Gene, you went out of your way to do this. You didn't have to do this either. We both could have pushed this off
forever.
As long as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, forever. But to sit here and do this, this is why I do this. This conversation is fantastic.
Yeah.
Just,
no.
Like when me and Dave were interviewing these strangers and we would have these moments of like, oh man, I'm actually having fun in this conversation and I'm going to get to listen over and over again and learn from it.
Yeah.
Like the Emily conversation, there's certain things from that conversation that have stuck with me and helped propel me to the next stage. It's built like the next layer of the foundation up here. Now I have a new launching point so that if I fail, I go back to just here, you know, as opposed to going all the way back to square one.
Yeah, totally. That's one thing I really love about jiu-jitsu too, is not just the you know, the martial arts aspect of it in the community. It is, well, maybe it is a community. It's like, I've never sat down and talked to a firefighter before in my entire life. I know nothing other than that they put out fires and save lives and rescue cats from telephone poles, right? So, like, that opportunity is, this opportunity between you and I is there because of jiu-jitsu, right? Like, I wouldn't, there's not a chance in the world I probably would ever even met you outside of jiu-jitsu, much less sat down and had a conversation about, you know, jiu-jitsu and you as a firefighter. So that's one, you know, I don't know that it's promoted even, that's one aspect of jiu-jitsu that's just kind of a excellent byproduct.
Yeah, that's what's, people are starting to consciously understand that now.
Yeah.
Like, you're getting a successful type of person in every aspect of life. And when people come together and they all have completely different stories, but they have this unifying will to succeed through such adversity. Like I feel like jiu-jitsu is manufacturing the most amount of adversity possible without physical harm.
Right.
Like
there's being a chance overly
for,
dangerous.
Yeah, there's a chance for physical harm. But like say you do boxing, you're going to hurt yourself. Your brain is going to get hurt.
100%. Yeah.
And you might get the same benefits as you get in jiu-jitsu for the adversity and learning different things and pushing through. But jiu-jitsu, you have less of a chance of getting hurt.
Yeah.
And like almost the maximum. But there is a limit there too. That's where firefighting takes me to a level where jiu-jitsu could never take me.
Right.
It takes me to the point where I could die.
Yeah, yeah, legit could
or
die.
Or I could get somebody else killed for being
absolutely
stupid. Or like,
yeah.
So if I'm going to be lazy, it's just not an option. Like my dad is there too over my shoulder. Like, listen, it's not an option for you not to know the answer.
Right.
So you better be reading and trying to learn as much. You better do as much as you possibly can. Because there's no excuse for it. Like,
right.
You can't pull any, there's nothing you could say. Even for your family, you
right.
have to do it right.
Yeah, yeah,
so that kind of pushes, like, it's nice to have that. But when you try new things, it's hard to find those same reasons.
Yeah, totally is. How are you finding the balance now with the promotion? I mean, I know it's really fresh.
Yeah, it's still fresh. So, that's an easy excuse to say, you know what, I'm not going to go today because, I told Dave, let me just get a full night of sleep so that I focus all my mental energy on my job.
Right.
You know, because usually I was just coasting, I just have to show up, make sure I don't get myself hurt. And I've already been through all the things a firefighter could go through pretty
right.
much. I've done them all live.
Yeah.
As a captain, everything's brand new, fresh. So I play out scenarios, even when I'm off work in my head of like, all right, if this happens, then this,
Yeah.
So yeah, it does make it, it's going to pass. Like you
oh,
were saying,
totally,
you've been in management, I've been talking to a lot of different people that I look up to and they're like, listen, you're going to be fine.
Yeah, totally gonna
and
be
it,
fine.
It does.
Yeah.
It feels good when they say it, but it's like you can't know for sure.
Not until you get through it.
Yeah, you can't.
Right.
Like, I'm not gonna know for sure until I get through it. But to have their support, it's like, all right, they've been through it too. So let me just. I try to use their support to get me to the next step, and it's just one step, one foot in front of the other.
That's all it is. I used to run marathons, and it was always and it's hard. One foot in front of the other, legitimately, like literally one foot in front of the other. I think you're gonna do well. And the reason I think so is, one, you're in jiu-jitsu, so you're bound to do well. But, you took this on your own because you wanted it. You were hungry for it. And you're not going to want to not do a good job at it. And that alone, and people will see that in you, it'll come out, right, in the way that you manage, in the way that you lead and direct and so on. And it's just going to reinforce that you're doing the right thing, and you're going to continue to just get better and better at it. I've seen it happen hundreds of times in the military, you know, and I think you're going to – had you had to do this, somebody says, look, you're chosen, you're the captain, you probably wouldn't do so well, right, especially if it wasn't something you wanted to do. You sought this out on your own, put in the work, did the study, got the promotion. You got it. You got all the pieces right there, you know, to do it well. You got the support of you know, your leadership, obviously, I'm sure, too. You know,
I hope so. But well, what it comes down to is it's really not starting from zero. The difference between being a brand new captain as opposed to a brand new firefighter is I have 8 years of reputation behind me.
Yeah.
And I do take reputation very seriously because it's like a safety net. Like, people will give you the benefit of the doubt before you've even done it. Like, you're giving me benefit of the doubt and you don't even know what I'm like as a fireman.
Yeah.
Because you've seen what I've done outside of it. So there's people in firefighting that have seen what I've done. Guys that are 50 years old that are like, yeah, I'm going to go work with you. I would love to.
Yeah.
You know, when you get a spot, you know, look me up. And that feels fantastic.
Yeah.
Because can you imagine, like, how many 32-year-old men are you going to take advice from in any part of your life, anything, jiu-jitsu, anything?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you have to look around. Like, when you see me in the school, you're not just basing your thoughts on me based on our interactions. We don't have that many interactions.
Right.
You're basing on watching how I interact with every person, how I interact with Dave.
Yeah.
How I interact with people that come visit.
Correct.
You know, and I'm...
And what you're wearing on your belt, too. I mean, if you were a white belt, I probably would not look at you the same.
To an extent, you're right. But say it was no-gi. Say we did no-gi every day.
Yeah.
You would still see it. Just the way I interact, the way I pull people aside. You're going to unconsciously pay attention to that. I consciously... I'm aware that every time I walk in that room, I'm aware of it.
Yeah,
Some days I'm lazier than others, but as long as my baseline, I know what I'm putting forward. Same thing in the firehouse, same thing as a parent. That's why I want to train jiu-jitsu. That's why I want to move up the ranks. I want to provide my family the proof through actions.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm going to tell my daughters to go to jiu-jitsu, I better be going.
That's the reason I go.
If I'm going to tell my daughters, hey, you got to clean up your mess, I better clean up my mess.
Yeah.
If I'm going to tell them, you need to do well in school, I better be studying hard for the Chiefs test and do well on it so I could show them the proof.
Yeah.
Now, I could tell them I made mistakes. When I was younger, I didn't like school at all. I did terrible in school. I would do my bare minimum, my conscience will allow me, was like C's and D's. My conscience is like, good enough. You're going to pass.
Yeah.
My mother hated that.
Yeah. Most mothers would,
but
I think.
But the problem is my mother couldn't figure out how to motivate me in that specific way. She found other ways to motivate me in different ways. Same thing with my father. He couldn't motivate me to do exercise for baseball. Like, he's like, listen, you should be doing push-ups every day, sit-ups every day. You should be running. And I was like, Dad, you don't run. You don't do any of that stuff. He's like, yeah, but you should. I was like, no, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
If he would have did it, I'm not saying 100% I would have done it, but maybe.
Yeah, so lead now, by example.
So
right.
I want to, that's what he says all the time. He didn't want to lead by that example. Because he didn't want to do that one. He did the firefighting one, the captain one.
Yeah.
He did that specifically on purpose, and I followed along. So as a father, those are the things I think about. Like, if I'm going to tell my daughters to do anything, I'm better be doing it too. I always hated that because I said so kind of mentality.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm never going to say that to my daughters. I'm making it a point to never say that.
Good luck, man. Good luck. I don't like to say that to my son, and I very rarely do, but he pushes me sometimes to the point where that's the end of the argument. There's no more discussion. You're going to put your shoes on and go to school kind of thing because I said so.
Yeah. I know. Listen, it's easy for me to say because I haven't got through that part of it yet, but I'm going to do every effort. Like, let me try to unturn every stone before I'm going to have to pull that card out, because I would find it super hypocritical because I was that kid that was always like I would be extra rebellious when my mom would say something like that, or I'd be rebellious in a different type of way. And I know it's spiteful and wrong, but if I give them that chance to play that card, it's my fault.
Yeah, you're giving it to him. Absolutely. Totally.
And I know I'm going to go through that eventually. I dread those days. Those are about 10 years from now.
Speaking of that, it's a good segue. Where do you see yourself, two things, both jiu-jitsu and in your career 10 years from now?
10 years from now, I hope to be a chief. It is possible for that to happen. I just got to put the time in and study. I haven't really been studying for the past couple of years because I've just been waiting. But my past couple of shifts, I started talking to guys that are getting ready for their captain's test. And I'm starting to give them some advice that I wish I would have had when I was doing it, and advice that I was given by people above me, and it's going to get me back in the books. So I think I could for sure be a chief by then. As for jiu-jitsu, 10 years from now, I'm hoping to be a black belt. Who could say for sure? I bet Dave would bet against me on that. But the black belt actually has nothing to do with anything. I'm hoping to still be training in 10 years. As long as I'm still training, hopefully with Dave, hopefully helping him promote his first black belts.
Yeah.
He should hopefully have black belts by 10 years from now. It's definitely possible.
Yeah.
And I want to help with that. I want to be part of the community still then. That's really my goal for that. The real goals I have is for podcasting. I hope 10 years from now, I'm still podcasting. That's my only goal. Stand-up comedy is not a big deal for me. I'm trying to use that to propel me into having purpose with my words. Like, I can sit and have a conversation with somebody and not have any pauses. Fine.
Yeah.
That's step one. Step two is, all right, the words that you say, are they making people happy? Are they teaching? Is it knowledge? Am I making people laugh? Am I showing people my own mistakes? Even just for my daughters, even if only my daughters listen to this 10, 15, 20 years from now.
Right.
My grandkids are listening to this 40 years from now. I'm thinking about lineage.
Yeah. So
the thing is, the one foot in front of the other, I don't lean that way. I lean towards 30, 40, 50 years too much, and I get overwhelmed into inaction.
It can stagger you, man. I've done that myself. You can really be so overwhelming that you do nothing, right?
So in terms of 10 years, I think about that way too much. That's why it's easy for me to give you answers on that.
Yeah.
Ask me what I'm going to do, on Wednesday.
What are you going to do tonight?
Tonight, I'm going to go and do an open mic for the first time in 2 years. I'll do it.
There it is. You heard it, everyone. He's doing it. By the time this comes out, he'll be giving us feedback on how it went.
Yeah, this is coming out on Thursday, so I will have done it by then, and then I'll talk about it with Dave. I don't even know. I think we're recording with Maddie this week. He didn't say if he scheduled. I bet he didn't. Dave's so busy, I don't give him a hard time anymore. Last year, I used to give him a hard time because during COVID, he actually had a lot more free time.
Yeah.
So when he wouldn't do something, I would get on his back a lot. But now he works too much, so I don't care if we ever have a guest again. I'll sit and talk with Dave every time.
Yeah.
But it is nice sometimes to mix it up, talk to somebody
else. I like it when you guys mix it up. I mean, I haven't listened to every single podcast, and I don't know if I will, but when I work from home like today, I can pop it on and listen to it while I'm working because there's no distractions. When I'm in the office, forget about it. I got millions of people coming in and out of the door distracting me, and then, a gazillion other excuses why I don't listen to all of them. But I do like it when you guys mix it up. It's pretty cool. I think the first one I listened to, and it was a later one, was when you guys had Greg on, I think. No, it was just Dave and Greg, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, that's a nice little change of format. And then have some other big name jiu-jitsu people on. It was good stuff, man. So this is good. Thanks for sitting down. And
well, listen, I got to thank you for, people don't understand. How much time have you spent putting these questions together? This isn't, you're not spending hours and hours, but here and there you have a question, you write it down, and you've come up with a lot of different questions. And I love answering questions. Dave's doesn't have time to sit and put together questions, and his perspective is very similar to mine because we spend so much time together.
Yeah.
He already knows what my answers are going to be, so sometimes he won't even ask a question because I already know the answer to that. And he doesn't understand that other people don't know.
Correct. Yeah. Ask the question. Other people want to hear it too. Absolutely. Yeah, this was good. Thanks for coming out and taking the time, and hopefully it's a success. Good luck tonight.
Well, let me ask you a question. What is your future? What makes you want to even sit here and do this with me?
Well, two things. I think I'm like you in the sense of how you said that you wanted Dave to kind of succeed and, with get him on the podcast and then start pushing this for, for the gym. I want the same thing. And then it's both of you doing it. And then, I'm a curious individual. I like to learn new things, learn about new things. I think, learning, talking to an expert in anything that you're interested in is all a great opportunity. I consider you an expert in jiu-jitsu. Like I said, I've never sat down and talked to a firefighter in my entire life before. So this is cool for me to learn, right? To take in these new experiences. I like talking to people. So that's kind of why I wanted to kick it off with Dave, because I knew Dave, like you said, you and I have not had a lot of conversations, very few and very few words in between. And then once that happened with Dave, I liked it. I liked kind of the way it ended, the end product. And then I heard you say that, oh yeah, maybe I'll do one too. I said, yeah, you will. So that was kind of why I wanted to do this. I'm glad I did too.
Well, are you going to keep doing it? Podcasting?
I don't know, man. I don't know if I really want to do podcasting myself, but I don't mind being on in a format like this, right? I got so many other responsibilities. I want to spend time with my son, my job. I travel a lot. My wife, keeping up with this freaking house, So to be on and do this, intermittently, I could totally see myself doing, but I don't know if I would actually like really get into podcasting.
I'll change your mind over time, because you are, I gotta tell you, you are good at putting questions together. You're great at having a conversation, and we are similar for sure, because but we just went down completely different paths from completely different starting points.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, your upbringing is way different from mine, just time period, you know, where you grew up, the technologies that were
at
available.
100%,
but
yeah.
For us to still come to end up kind of at the same thoughts, you know, when I tell you some of the epiphanies that I have, and you're like, yeah, I agree with those.
Yeah.
Not everybody agrees with the way I see things, the way that we see things.
Yeah.
And it's fun to come together and do this. And I think you underestimate the power this is going to have for your future. Like, this is recorded forever. This will always be on the internet for your children to listen to, if you want your wife to listen to it.
Yeah.
I think the more of these that you could put out, I think ultimately it'll be better. And you'll actually get better and better at this.
Yeah.
Because I think your starting point is higher than most people's would be. So I would love to listen to your podcast.
You know, it's funny, Ed, man, as I had a friend, God rest his soul, died 51 from cancer. For the last 5 years of his life, he tried to get me into podcasting. He's like, Gene, we'd sit down and we have these conversations. We talk about politics. We talk about family. We talk about other crazy stuff. He's like, let's do it. Let's do a podcast. He lived in DC. I lived up here. We never really brought it together. And in fact, I don't even think at the time I was listening to podcasts when he was trying something like, what is a podcast? I don't even know what it is. Only for, you know, him to pass away, and then I start listening to podcasts, and now this is the second one I've been on. It's kind of surreal, to be honest.
Yeah, don't close the door on it.
No, I don't think I would.
Keep an open
closed
mind. Dave said the same thing to me. You're very good at this, and you haven't even done it.
Right.
Because basically all this is to just, we're feeding off each other,
right?
And we have the momentum, and you have a list in front of you, so that's a nice, it gives you peace of mind, like, all right, I've thought a lot about this, and I'm actually interested in it,
right?
So sometimes, you know, if you're ever thinking about doing it, you know who
you
to call.
I
can help you. I would love, because I'm looking to help produce different ones just to be involved in. I want to listen. I want to, it's like teaching jiu-jitsu. If you could teach it, you're getting better too. You're both getting better. So if you let me teach you half guard, even though I've taught it a million times, I'm still going to get better, because you're going to take it a little bit different. There's going to be certain parts that you get and don't get, and it's going to be flipped when somebody else I'm teaching gets this part and not that part.
Yeah.
And it's fun together to try to get a little bit tighter on how to teach it. And teaching podcasting, I mean, I still don't even know what I'm doing, really.
Looks like studio equipment to me, man. I wouldn't even know where to do it. I knew you needed a power outlet.
Listen,
that was about the extent of it.
It would be super simple. Like, if you wanted to, I'm saying, it would be easy for you to do it. It's just about time. Like, if you don't have the time, you can make that excuse. But there is enough time. Even if it's a half hour a week or an hour a month. Say you did an hour of podcasting a month, you know, over 10 years. That's a lot of hours.
That's a lot of content, right? Yeah.
That your family, even, that's how I look at it. Just your family to have. Like, if I could have audio of my mother at 32, seeing where her mindset was at, my father at 32, and see, like, all right, they're going through kind of the similar problems I'm going through.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's even just a time capsule.
I was just going to say, you capture that moment in time. Like, you're lucky enough where your father's still around. You can have a conversation with him. Unfortunately, mine's long since passed. But it would be really cool to have that, like, audio of him.
But listen, you could have that with your own son as he gets older. Maybe you prepare for when he's a teenager and you want to teach him things, or you instead of sitting him down and talking to him about it, you say, hey, listen to this conversation I had with this guy. And you could see where his head was at. Maybe you talk to teenagers, or maybe you talk to 20-year-old. Like, I want to talk to the whole spectrum of age groups.
Right.
You know, life, different life experiences.
Yeah.
And I can cherry pick certain, even just clips. I can just clip a part out and say, hey, this is where I actually learned this. Like,
right,
this is where I had this epiphany exactly. There's certain things that I came up with in real time, and I recorded it and listened back to them. Like, oh my God, I never even had that thought before.
Right.
This is the inception of it.
Yeah.
And look what it built towards, because there's certain things that are starting to build, like the Emily thing. We had that conversation a year ago, and I'm still building off of that.
Yeah.
And it comes from a different place. So I'm telling you, like, for your own personal growth, it'll help you. For your children's personal growth, it'll help
you. Yeah. Well, I like that. As you were talking, I started writing a kind of like a, you ever see that show, Sons of Anarchy?
I know of it. I never actually got into it.
His father, like the main character, he had all these I don't know, journals or whatever that he was reading from his dead father. And I was like, so when my son was born, I started writing all this stuff down. Then my computer crashed and I lost it.
Oh,
but
God.
This would be an awesome way to capture that is through like podcasting.
What I'm saying is you don't need to put it out to the public even. Because when I started, none of it was supposed to be public. I just put it in a secret place and I used to send links out to like Dave and different people in my life. I'm like, hey, pay attention to this. Like initially my idea was I have friends from different groups that never really meet each other. Like I have firefighter friends that never talk to my high school friends, that never talk to my jiu-jitsu friends. So I'm like, listen, I think you would really like this guy. But instead of meeting him and it being like a little awkward thing, listen to why I like them. Listen to the conversation that we've had.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll like them too.
Yeah.
And you could transfer that to your own different circles and maybe you can connect.
Wasn't even a thought that I would ever think to have this format used for, to like, you listen to this conversation and be kind of, you know, you might like this, it'd be kind of cool. And I guess that's how I got started. Or I don't know how you started listening to podcasts, but that's kind of how it happened with me. A friend of mine in Texas says, hey, you know, I've been listening to these guys, you know, Jocko and Joe Rogan. This was years ago. Well, not that many years ago, 5, 6. And he's done a couple since. And I'm like, man, he's right. I do like this or I do like that, whatever it is. Yeah. I didn't even think about that.
No, I still do that. Like my favorite podcasts have changed over time. But every once in a while, because I listen to, you know, 10, 20 episodes a week of different ones.
Yeah.
There's always one or two during the week that I'm like, this has to go out to this specific person. Like I'll be listening to them, be like, oh my God, if this person that doesn't listen to the podcast, if they just listen to this one.
They'll start, right?
Maybe they'll start, or maybe they'll just pick up one piece, the piece that I'm trying to talk about.
Yeah.
Like maybe you're having a discussion, a heated discussion with somebody, you know, about difficult topics. And sometimes you don't have the exact right words to say it because you're not actually the expert.
Right.
But there's somebody that you look up to. Like, listen, they said it. This is exactly what I agree with. And they said it in a very succinct way. Just give it a chance. Listen to it. You know, I've been doing this with my own mother. You know, sometimes we don't see eye to eye on specific things. Like, hey, listen to this. And then she'll send me things. And then when you listen to something that somebody sent to you, it really makes them appreciate it. Like, she really appreciates it. And then we can have a discussion from a more centered place because, oh, this is what you mean. Like, certain words, people have different definitions for.
Correct.
And now you see where her thought process is coming from. It's not coming from completely her. She's getting it from here, and she agrees with this person. So now you look into this person. So I like to look into different people.
Yeah.
And I like to send my people to different people to see if they agree or disagree, and then maybe you don't come to agreement. But they know for sure what you think, and maybe they can at least respect the opinion more because it's put in a way that they can understand better.
Yeah, and you're also hearing it from somebody other than, in your case, your mother, right? Which they could be saying the same thing, you know, like my son. I could say something to him and he like blow me off, but somebody else says it makes sense.
This is what drives Dave crazy every time, is when I hear what he's been telling me from somebody else, but they say it just in a way that I would like.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Dave, I'm going to start doing this now. And he's like, you've got to be kidding
me. I've been telling you that forever.
I've done that to him at least 30 times. All right, so we're going to wrap this up. Just make sure.
Dude, it's already after 2. We've been going. Holy cow.
Yeah, this is easy.
We've been going for a while.
The reason I'm pushing you so hard is because these conversations are hard sometimes. And sometimes they're easy. This is towards the easy side, and I had a lot of fun. And I was telling Dave, like, I'm just going to kick him off, and then me and you will just keep going.
No. You guys got this. I enjoy listening to it, just like I enjoy hanging out and being in the gym and getting beat up.
Yeah, well, I know Dave told you not to let me in your house.
He did. Right,
What'd you say to him?
I just sent back a smiley emoji. That was it. And then Christina sent over a text today. She's like, good luck. I heard Ed's coming over.
Yeah. Well, Dave, I know you're listening to this right now. I hope you like this one. My last episode, he didn't like too much with me and my dad. It hurts when he says that, but I understand where it comes from when he says that.
This goes back to what I was, we got to wrap this up soon, but this goes back to what I was talking about with, I don't know when he's serious and when he's not on the podcast. In person, no problem, but on the podcast, I'm like, does he really not like this?
No, this is what Dave does. He overemphasizes the negative and underemphasizes the positive. So he overall likes it. Like every episode that I put out, he's like, yeah, keep putting them out. Good. But this part, not good.
Yeah.
And he really focuses on that. And I really focus, maybe he doesn't, but I really focus on only the bad parts because those are the parts I want to fix.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes I'm hard to work with because I want positive and negative at the same time. It's got to be the exact balance that I want, and it's impossible. So he goes to the negative because he knows it's going to keep pushing me further. So I thank Dave for that. But Dave, seriously, if Gene ever asked me to do this full time, I would kick you right to the curb. So
don't worry, Dave. I'm not going to ask him to do that. You're all good, man.
Not yet. So make sure you go check me out, sweatyeddie.com, sweaty3ddy on Twitter and Instagram. Gene, I don't know if you want anybody to follow you on anything.
Nope, I got nothing to follow. I'm a follower.
Well, I'm going to talk you into this eventually, but thanks so much for having me here and doing this with me, because you did put a lot of time into this, and I very appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It was cool. I enjoyed it.
All right, so I hope you guys enjoy. This is the Sweaty Eddie Show, episode 22.